Imagine surrounding yourself with incredible women, women who've overcome challenges, they've rebounded after failures and disappointments, and women who are not afraid to shine their brilliance to make a mark in the world. These women support other like-minded women because they know there is plenty of opportunity for everyone, and that together we really can make a difference, grow our businesses while have fun along the way. This is what Women in Leadership Podcast is all about. Welcome. I'm your host, Anne-Marie Cross. Grab a cover of your favorite beverage, pull up a chair, and let's get this conversation started. And welcome to another episode. So my guest today says rest is a power leadership move. Joining me on today's show is Annalisa Quiroz-Wolf. Annalisa is a seasoned certified executive coach. She's a CEO of Women of Color Rise, an equity-based coaching firm focused on diverse leaders. She coaches social entrepreneurs, C-suite leaders, CEOs to build their organizations as well as expand their impact. She has a 25-year career. She served as the CEO of a $30 million nonprofit brand manager of a Fortune 200 company and a captain in the US Air Force. A Fulbright scholar, Pahara, I hope I've spelt that or pronounced that correctly, fellow and member of the Aspen Global Leaders Network. She's also an acclaimed author with books including The Myths of Success, A Woman of Color's Guide to Leadership. Annalisa leads the Women of Color Rise Next Level Leadership course and has a podcast called Women of Color Rise. Now, on today's show, she's going to share if you really want to change the world, women should aspire to be CEO. She's going to talk about be prepared to navigate the double bind. Wonder what that is. She's going to share more about that, as well as it is possible to break through that concrete ceiling. Now, this is different than the glass ceiling for women of color by understanding how the game is played and so much more. Welcome, Annalisa.
Thanks so much, Anne-Marie.
Your background is so impressive, and I hope I pronounced all of those things correctly, having that Aussie Kiwi twang. What was it that led you on the path to where you are today? I mean, was it a woman in your life that inspired you? What was it that inspired your career and where you are today?
Anne-Marie, I think what inspired me was, as a child, for example, not going to great schools. So that inspired the trek into education, starting schools for low-income students of color like myself. And then later, now, focused on adults and helping us rise, because I didn't really have that. There are not that many, as you know, women of color in top seats. And so how can we support this ascent? So it's all about, what kind of challenges did I face and what kind of resources did I wish that I had had? How can I provide that to others?
Yeah, I love that, because so often when you ask that question, it can go multiple ways, but it often is someone inspired me. So there was someone that had gone before me, or I saw a need. And obviously you saw a need because it was something that you wished would have been there. So you get to be the inspiration for others now who come behind you and are able to learn from your insights. I love that you've said if you really want to change the world, women should aspire to be CEO. Let's unpack this a little bit, because I'm sure there's so many different aspects to this. But what do you mean by that, and how can we start encouraging women to want to aspire to be the CEO?
So Anne-Marie, if we walked around and asked any young girls or even women, what do you want to be when you grow up? Highly unlikely that they would say CEO. And why is that? When we think back about what the great jobs are, right? It's like doctor, lawyer, engineer, teacher. And the idea of a girl, a woman wanting to power, it just seems naughty. Like, that's not for you. You should be behind the scenes, making things happen, caring for others. And so I answer this question of how do we help women want to aspire to be CEO? Because we want to help. We want to have impact. We want to make often the world a better place. And so actually, when you take seats of power, that helps make that happen. And as much as I say this out loud, it seems so obvious, right? If you want to help, of course you want to be a leader, because we'll have more influence. But for me, myself, Anne-Marie, I never aspired to be CEO. Never, ever, ever. Even 5, 10 years back, I would never have said that. It wasn't until a mentor, so talking about the people who inspired us, who said to me, why are you continuing to look for other people to work for? Why are you looking for the woman of color who you can be COO or serve? Why don't you step up and be that person? You have all of these degrees and this background. You're absolutely qualified. And I needed someone to tell me that, to say, you are ready right now, go for it. And thankfully, I heard that and I stepped into it.
Yeah, I love that. Why I love that too is because the previous show, so people hopefully have gone and listened to that originally, beautifully speaks into what we're talking about today. And that is that often women have had other maybe role models in leadership who may very well have been men who quite often lead in a very different way. And some leaders are quite narcissistic, and so they should not have leadership roles at all, which is a whole other topic. But what I wanted to reflect on and what we were talking about is that women often bring compassion and empathy, and that it's called soft skills. And that soft skills are not often looked at. It, unfortunately, I should say that is changing in the workplace, but those are the skills that often make the difference between a good leader and an exceptional leader, because they create an environment in which everyone can thrive, not just a few, but create an environment that everyone should thrive. So speak a little bit about why you think or could one of the reasons why women don't aspire, not only do they not think that they could be a good leader, but some of the role models they've seen, it's like, well, I don't want to be like that. That could also put them off too. Have you had that experience or heard other women say that? They don't want to be like the leaders we see?
Absolutely. So you pointed to one of the myths in this book that I wrote, The Myths of Success, A Woman of Color's Guide to Leadership. And one of them is, if I want to be a leader in the military, in corporations, in nonprofit, wherever it is, I need to look a certain way, which is male, often white. And I need to act a certain way, which is dominant, decisive, you know, here's what we're going to do, incredibly charismatic, magnetic personality out there. And for people who don't fit that personality type or don't look that way, it's like, well, I don't see myself and I don't want to be like that. And I don't want to also sacrifice my whole life. Often we're mothers, we want to take care of our community, we're caregivers to our parents. And so we look at some of these role models who are not really role models and say, actually, I don't want that. I don't want work to be all of my life. I don't want to act like that. I am emotional. And I guess I'm being emotional is a weakness in leadership. But in actuality, it's a power move, being able to be attuned to each other, to say, how are you, Anne-Marie? How are things at home? To actually bring the whole person, no matter what level, no matter where they are in life, to care. So it is a power move, but it's so different than what we would expect about what a typical leader is.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting when you say about, I don't want to be emotional. I don't know who said that or who continues that talk, but being a narcissistic leader or someone that has so much ego, that is bringing an emotion too, but it's just a real angry, you know, kind of emotion behind that too. So it depends. It really is. What emotion are you going to bring? Because your emotions and your core values and so forth are going to impact your approach and your attitude. And I think having an attitude where you want the best for all of your team and you recognize that you all work together to the best of whatever goal vision and mission that you're working towards, creating that environment where people can thrive is going to ultimately benefit everybody, including you as that leader. Let's talk about being prepared to navigate the double bind. Talk about what is double bind and what are some of the double binds maybe you've experienced, but that you see others experience too.
Okay, so the double bind is you're damned if you do, you're damned if you don't. So what does that mean? So think about the stereotype of a woman. They need to be kind. They need to be humble. So that's beautiful, right? To be kind and humble. But the reality is that if you want to grow in your career and rise in promotions and get noticed, you have to speak up. You have to share your accomplishments. But If you do, they will think, well, you're not kind or humble. You're not a good woman. So how do you do this? How do you share your accomplishments so that you can have a career of impact, but also be humble? And so that's the double bind. You're like, damned if you do and damned if you don't. But you can navigate this. And this is the key. And I love so much that this is not just my story, but it's the stories of people I've interviewed on my own podcast, Women of Color Rise, and this book that I wrote. You can do this. And here's how you do it. So the trick is that when I want to share accomplishments, I will share it on behalf of the team. I will say, if you're my boss, Anne-Marie, I'd say, Anne-Marie, I'm so proud of what this our team accomplished. Even though we were short-staffed, we were able to pull through this timeline that was behind by 6 months. We brought it back to on schedule and also was over budget. And we brought it back to on budget. And I'm really proud of the team and what they've accomplished. But really, what I'm saying is, I led this team. And here's what we accomplished because of my leadership. So this is how you do it. And you and celebrate yourself, but also seem kind and humble.
You know, often women, some women, because sometimes you hear people have those conversations, and you're probably at that stage too, and you kind of have to do a double check back and say, when was it that I no longer did that, you know? Well, because as you explain that, it just makes so much sense, you know? And as you continue to learn, grow and develop, and you are able to transform those unhelpful beliefs that perhaps have been trickled down through, you know, generation after generation, or what we hear out in the industry, we know when we smell BS, and we know not to take that on board. But it's great to be able to have this conversation today. I love a conversation that I recently had with a guest where they were talking about, you know, so often as women, we assume that we need to be polite, but there's a difference in being able to share the truth and do so in a compassionate way, that you want the best for the team. So not saying something is actually not only harming yourself or potentially, you know, minimizing how you show up, but it's also minimizing how others show up. So talk a little bit about attitude and approach to, for women wanting and seeing the best for both parties, or if you're talking to your team, but also how you approach that conversation is going to impact how the conversation continues to continue and the outcome. Because being polite and not sharing the truth and not speaking up when it could impact the betterment for the whole team is doing everyone, including yourself, injustice. Does that make sense?
Completely. So here's the thing. To be a good leader, you need to be able to give tough feedback. And the way that we do this, right, because giving tough feedback means, oh, well, you're not a good woman. You're not kind, because why would you say something so mean? How could you do that to me? But we need to, if we really want to be the impactful leader and be able to grow our team and impact. So how do you do this? Here is the kind of the cheat code. I will say, so imagine, Anne-Marie, that I'm going to give you some tough feedback, or you're part of the team and I'm giving the team really tough feedback. And I'll say, I am so invested in you that I'm going to tell you the thing that some people might be afraid, because they might think, oh, well, that's really tough. And how could you say something like that? But here's the thing. I think you're awesome, Anne-Marie. I really care for you. I'm really invested in you. And I want you to grow. And that means that we're going to do better with some of the things that the projects we're working on. So I'm not talking about you as a person. I adore you. I like love you. And I want you to be all the things that you want to be in life. And also to get there, we need to work on some of these skills. So let's talk about the skills, not you as a person, separating that, but looking at some skills and talk about how these skills in terms of finance, budget, timeline, organization can get better. Are you in with me? And so that's how you would say it, deliver tough feedback, but always with, I care. I care, and that's the reason I'm going to give you some of this tough stuff.
Yeah, and I think creating that environment initially and an environment where it's a safe space, I think is so important, isn't it? Because you could go in there and just say, look, the results are shocking. What's going on? And immediately the other person is going to put in, you know, up barriers. I love that. And so what are some other double binds that you've seen? I mean, being tough and likable, are there any others that kind of stand out, or do you find that they kind of go under that umbrella of we're told to be kind, we're told to be humble? And by the way, humility should be something that even men have, because humility is about recognizing that, hey, I don't have all of the answers, but working together, we can support one another. And you've probably got an answer, and you having the answer and you being, you know, more experienced in that doesn't diminish my abilities either. So I think humility is something we should all strive for. But what are some other common double binds that you have seen?
So I want to talk about this idea of being decisive and then being collaborative. Women are transformational leaders, and research backs this, that we don't go at a goal to say, Anne-Marie, you better accomplish it, or I'm going to fire you, or I'm going to demote you. Something bad will happen. That's not how women tend to lead. They will tend to ask, Anne-Marie, what do you care about? How can I help you reach your goals? Okay, this organization has this opportunity. Do you want to do it? I'm excited. I'm going to help you. And so we tend to merge both the personal, our employees' cares, with the organizational. And those two together allow us then to say, okay, what can we accomplish with winning on both sides? And so here's a double bind, that often, because we want everyone to be winning and we also care about input, Anne-Marie, what do you think about this? I care about your feedback. You know, how can we make this product better? We sometimes tend to, because we're trying to get everyone involved, over-index, and then people think, well, geez, Annalisa can't make a decision. She needs other people to tell her what to do. It's a tough one. So that's obviously why she's asking everybody, because she's not able to make a decision. I faced this myself. I was like, well, how could you say that? You were just telling me that the past CEO never asked you for anything. And now I am. And now you're telling back to me, why don't you make the decision? Like, be decisive. So it was this very weird oxymoron where I'm like, I'm doing what you said you wanted, and now I'm getting penalized. And so then I had to like whack-a-mole on the other side, say, fine, this is what we're doing. It was so weird, right? Because here's a cheat code, which I did not know until I started talking with others, is you decide when you make a decisive decision and when you go get input. And if you decide to get input, you don't just keep on going, right? Like Anne-Marie, let's ask Anne-Marie's friend or grandma or daughter. I'm like, no. Maybe ask a few people, make a decision, say it with conviction, and stay with it. You don't keep on keeping on. And so that's the key, is you want to, yes, get input on certain decisions and then call it a day, make the decision, be really decisive, and show people that, yes, you're willing to stand by tough stuff.
Yeah, I love that. You know, what often as CEOs, I mean, CEOs do not have all of the answers. They make a decision, they're decisive on the information that is in front of them. And look, the decision that is made may not have the outcome that you had thought and or hoped for. Talk a little bit about this, because I read this on LinkedIn and I'm paraphrasing, but basically it said, I'm a CEO that recognizes that all the decisions I might make may not have the outcome that we wanted, and I'll own that as well. So even in that, it's decisive, and that has to come from ourselves, doesn't it? How we approach that and how we approach that and the attitude we take really sets the tone for the rest of the team. So we could come into a meeting, and I want to get your thoughts on this too, and say, look, the decision that I made didn't have the outcome that we wanted. However, now what we're going to do is look at the stats. What did work well? Because some of the things really did, and we want to keep those going. And this gives us an opportunity to put into place some processes to ensure that the next time we run this project, it's going to, you know, exceed our expectations. Let's move forward and see if we can identify that. It's all in the approach and the attitude you have as the leaders, because how you approach that is going to set the team, okay, that this is really good, or, oh, you know, I, you know, made a mistake, all this kind of, but I'd love your thoughts on that. It really is the attitude and how you establish the environment to how the team is directed and what they're going to say about you. Would you say that that's a fair call?
Absolutely. So I want to share a personal story. I once was part of an organization, many organizations actually, where there would be a mistake that happened. You're pretty sure the call happened at the top because we were following directives. And when it didn't work, there was no acknowledgement, no saying, hey, I didn't make the right call, nothing. You just pivoted and everyone's confused, a little bit angry, and we just move forward. So that's like typical, right? Things happen, we just pivot, no one owns anything, you keep moving. I once saw, it was so powerful, a male CEO, a white male CEO, say, you know what? That was on me. I made the wrong call there and I want to own it. So let me open it up to this whole organization and answer your questions. What questions do you have? Because I want to be transparent. I want you to be able to know how I'm feeling, what the decision is, and how we're moving forward. I don't know everything, but I'm willing to share. I, as a Filipino, as Asian, as a woman of color, was so moved by how this leader led that when I was in the CEO seat and I thought to myself, you know, I want to lead like that. And I did that in smaller settings with my team. But when it came to the organization, we had made a bad call and I decided to just open it up. I said, I want to own that that decision did not go as intended. And while the intention wasn't what I wanted, I want to own the impact. And so I want to open it up for everyone to ask questions. The leadership team is here. Let's go ahead and open up. And here's what I found. I found that the staff loved it. And I was running an educational nonprofit. The teachers loved it. They were like, wow, this is so great. Everything's transparent. But who hated it? It was my leadership team. They said, how could you? This feedback is terrible. They were asking questions they had no right to ask. There's no way. Why do we have to take all the blame for this? This is not my fault. And I realized that I can't just show up and say, well, let's go. You know, I'm going to take it. The team's going to take it. You know, whatever the different parts. I'm the leader, so I'm going to take all of it. But that doesn't mean that the team is ready. It's quite hard, right, to hear your staff question a lot of things and say, yes, that's right. I'm going to do better going forward. And now I know. So we have to go together.
Because guess what? And I'm sure you would have said this to the team. They're going to be saying that anyway about us. Wouldn't we want to be able to have that open and transparent so that we can address it? And if there is something that we really do need to speak to them about, we can put it to bed, so to speak. We can address that so that there is no unanswered questions. Because when there is a void, people are going to fill it, and often with the wrong narrative, isn't it? And you can influence positively that way. You know what's interesting about that, and you see this in leadership teams, even, you know, in governments around the world, ours as well, when there is a mistake that's made and you know that it is a bad mistake, they blame everyone and anybody else. And maybe that is because that there is this myth, it's not just a myth, it's just, you know, a ridiculous thought pattern that says as a leader, you don't make mistakes. And if you, and that is, there's also another one that if you admit that you are wrong, that shows weakness. I don't think it shows weakness at all, because I'm sure from the example that you shared, when that leader, that male CEO said, you know what, made a bad call, it is on me, I'm owning it, but I'm going to open it up to the, you would have gained a level of respect for that leader and wanted to contribute, you know, positively. And I'm sure you would have gotten the same experience when you did that with your team. Yes, they didn't see you as weak, but rather there was a level of respect from the team. Yes?
I think that's true. Yeah, that's the reason I did it. It was tough though, because as a leadership team, there are some questions that I wasn't able to answer. And they were like, this is a personal attack on me. And I was like, no, it's open, it's healthy. But I think if it's new, I mean, Henry, you and I are seasoned leaders. We've helped and been around the block. So we're now able to see, okay, you know what? It's okay to make mistakes. Owning it is really powerful. Being vulnerable is a power move. Rest is a power move. Those are not normal things that our new folks or newer folks think. And so we have to develop that. And when we swing so fast that they haven't seen the move, like I saw it. So I saw how powerful it could be. And they were like, this isn't right. This is not how we do things here. We just dominate and decide and they know nothing. And I was like,
yeah. So true. Let's talk about this, and I'm going to put you on the big screen because I really want you to speak into this. I know it's going to be so insightful for others. You say it is possible to break through the concrete ceiling. It's different from the glass ceiling, especially for women of color, by understanding how the game is played. Share more about this and feel free to unpack this. What do we need to know about this?
So the glass ceiling, as you know, Anne-Marie, is about how women have a ceiling. So we have a ceiling in front of us, and gosh, it's so hard. How are we going to break through so we can become a C-suite, C-leader, CEO? And the difference here between a woman of color and a white woman is that not only is it a ceiling for women of color, it is a concrete ceiling. So that means I can't even see past it. There are no role models who look like me. I don't even know, is it even possible to go beyond the ceiling? And so it's this additional layer. Not only am I a woman, I'm a woman of color, that prevents me from being able to go past and succeed and have other models of being. And so that's the reason I have, you know, this work that I do, is because I want us to see we are not alone. It is possible. There are white women, there are women of color. We together can rise. So that's the difference between glass ceiling and concrete ceiling.
Yeah, I love that. And so what insights have you learned and continue to pass on that we can share today for women who do feel that it's not just a glass ceiling that we're breaking through, but a concrete ceiling? What are some things that they can start to do to support themselves as they continue to grow and develop within their organization?
So it's important to understand how the game is played. Often growing up in school, I don't know if you were valedictorian, I was valedictorian, there's a syllabus, there's a teacher, there is raising your hand when you're called, there's knowing what to do at the right time. And we put our heads down, we do a good job, we speak up when we're told to speak up, we graduate, we do really well, we go on to college, we keep on keeping on. And we use that same playbook, which had worked in the workplace. We put our heads down, we're told what to do, we get it done, we focus on the work, we're not playing around, we're not just chatting with people, we're trying to get, you know, movement on the work. And that is actually the wrong move. To be able to rise in organizations, you have to understand that the game is now about, yes, you should do good work, and yes, you should build skill. But a lot of it is, who do you know? Do they know that you're working on projects that matter? And are you showing and asking for and advocating for moving up in an organization? And that's actually 60% of the work, which is weird, right? Like, you hear of people playing golf on Fridays, and you're like, that one doesn't contribute, and two, it's a waste of time, and three, I think that's terrible. Like, I look down on them. But actually, that is the work. They're making relationships. They're building trust. They're advocating and sharing what their goals are. And so when it comes time for promotion, I don't know if this happened to you, but it certainly happened to me. And I'm like, I nailed that, right? Great performance. They said I was really good. People must know because my team knows, my boss knows I should be good. But then they'll announce it's the golf person. That person gets the job. More junior, doesn't seem to do a good job. And yet, not only they get the job, they keep rising. And you're like, what is going on here? I thought I was doing all the things. I do three times more work than they do. How could this be? And so we have to see that we need to change, not ourselves, but the way in which we show up so that we can rise. And then when we're at those top roles, we can change how the game is played.
Yeah, I so agree with that, because some of the conversations that I've had with people, especially when we look at some of the things that happen within the workplace, those networking opportunities, well, they are networking opportunities, they're relationship building opportunities. And often, you know, as women, if we are juggling homes and family too, as soon as the workplace is finished, we've done our work, we've you know, all of the things, and probably much more has been done, we've got other responsibilities. But there, as you said, there are some key things that once you understand that, you are putting yourself up, putting your name up, speaking out and having those closer conversations with people so that they are aware of those things. And it can seem a little bit daunting, I think, for some people, particularly because, and again, I've heard, and I would love your experience on this, that some women, we, even though we are natural networkers, we don't see that because what are we like when we're around girlfriends? I mean, not that some of us may have a small group of girlfriends, but when we're hanging out with the people who we know we trust, it's great, you know, develop relationships. But externally, it can be a little bit more, we're a bit more hesitant. Have you found that too, as far as networks? And we don't recognize the value of creating these networks and nurturing them.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So we are natural relationship builders. But when we say networking, we want to barf. Like, I vomit on networking. I'm not fake. I don't want to do this happy hour. Plus, it's late at night. I have children. I have parents. Like, I don't have time for this, like, terrible waste of alcohol. Like, no. And so it's interesting because actually it's mindset, right? Like, one, it's important because you need to know certain people to get things done. But two, it's actually building relationships. It's being able to connect with people, get to know people, know they don't have to look like you or be the same, even race or gender. In fact, it's better to get to know other people because we're curious, right? We want to know how what makes other people tick. Maybe we find a shared passion. And it's these authentic relationships that help when we're trying to say, hey, what strategic projects are happening in the company? What advice would you give me? You know, unfortunately, they're having a layoff and I want to be able to knock on someone's door and say, hey, could you tell me more about your work and give me some advice and maybe give me a referral? And so it's these things that help to make it more fun and authentic. But two, there's no such thing, especially now, of a job guarantee. So we have to recession proof. We have to build some security, and networks are the way to do that.
Yeah, so, so important. I love that. I know that we've only just scratched the ceiling on, or just scratched the surface, I should say, on what we've spoken about today. And I do say that often, and that is because the conversation, we could continue sharing incredible value. But I know that you've got lots of other resources, your own podcast. How are people able to find out more about you, Annalisa, and listen to your podcast and connect with you?
Sure. So just pointing us to my podcast called Women of Color Rise. And we spotlight top senior women of color and their own journeys. Second, that book you mentioned earlier, The Myths of Success, A Woman of Color's Guide to Leadership, that you can find on Amazon. Third is you can go to my website, Annalisa Wolf, A-N-A-L-I-Z-A Wolf, W-O-L-F.com. I'm also on Instagram, Annalisa Wolf, YouTube, Annalisa Wolf. And I'd love to reach out also on LinkedIn. Thanks so much.
All right. Thank you so much for coming on the show. Hey, it's Anne-Marie. Before I go, are you a coach or a consultant who feels like the world's best kept secret? Your experience is vast, yet secretly you're frustrated because despite all of your hard work, you're just not getting the visibility, the recognition, or new clients you'd hope for, and you don't know why? I've created a free resource that'll help you build visibility, generate leads, and enroll dream clients with ease because you're seen as a trusted authority, even in a crowded marketplace. And you've positioned yourself as the choice versus just a choice for your dream client. To get started, go to annemariecross.com/gift. That's annemariecross.com/gift.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.